Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
And there's a line drive down the left field line. Fair ball hitting on the grass. It one hops the wall. J.D. scores the tying run. Throw into second, and it's a double. Worked that at bat. He got a hanging breaking ball. More like a curve than a slider. And he ripped it one hop off the wall.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Twins.
And there's a drive hit the right field and very well. Back goes Kepler to the wall. Looking up, it's off the limestone. Mookie hits second. He's on his way to third. He turns it on. Here's the throw. And he's in there standing. He sort of loped around second then and really turned on the afterburners. He hit the limestone, which is right below the flower box out there. Missed a home run by just a couple of feet.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
Well, how about that? A win for the Red Sox. And guess what? It only took 9 innings. We didn't have to play 17 innings to get a result. And last night, of course, and I know they said it's just one game, but that has really got to suck. You play 17 innings last night. And you lose that game to the Twins. Now you respond tonight. You pick up a 9-4 win over Minnesota. And what do you know? The Red Sox with a huge win in terms of they take 2 of 3 from a team that is legitimately good. That's been one of the questions with this Red Sox team all season long. We challenged them. We said you got to go out there and you got to beat a good team. And what do you know? They did it. They just took 2 of 3 from the Twins. Because remember, 1-4 against the Yankees. 4-5 against the Rays. You went 1-2 against Cleveland, who's not even that great. 2-4 against the Astros, 2-2 against the Rangers. You go up against a team that's having a tremendous season in the Twins. You go into Minnesota, into their home building, and you take 2 of 3. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. Your number tonight, 617-779-7937. So that's the big positive takeaway you have from the Red Sox tonight is they take 2 of 3 away from a team that they desperately needed to prove that they could beat good competition. Not that we didn't believe they had the talent to do so, but they just had to go out and do it. Remember, they had been struggling all season long against teams over 500. The record now is at 18-24. And tonight, a big building block for this team going forward is, all right, because we said it last week, when you went up against the Royals and you swept them, what'd you do against Tampa Bay? You dropped 3 of 4 in that series. Okay, so this week, before this, you play the Orioles over the weekend. How are you going to respond against a good team? A team that, in terms of statistical stuff, they have been remarkable this season. The Twins are leading most offensive categories, home runs, runs, batting average, all that stuff, OPS, in a ton of categories, and in every category, they're like top 5 in Major League Baseball from an offensive perspective, and you go in there and you shut them down, really, for 3 games. I mean, the Twins' offense was pretty much dormant for most of this series, but you like the way that the offense responded tonight because you needed that. Last night was absolutely pathetic. It was atrocious from an offensive perspective. You look at just Christian Vasquez, who had the night off, of course, after catching all that last night. Now I get Leon came on later on in the game. But think about how much innings was going through Vasquez yesterday. Think about how long that guy was catching last night. I mean, unbelievable to see how long Vasquez was out there. So it's a good thing they brought in Leon tonight. But nonetheless, Vasquez last night, not once but twice, he's unable to drive in a run when you have a runner on third base with less than 2 outs. This is like situational hitting. At its most basic, he couldn't drive in the runs. Okay, one of the times, he popped out to the second baseman. I mean, it's just, it's unacceptable, right? And then you think about that 17th inning last night. And remember, in totality, it was 1 of 13 last night with the Red Sox with runners in scoring position. And that 17th inning, what a joke. I mean, Benintendi steals second base after a hit. And then he gets to third after the wild throw to second there. And what happens after that? You have 3, 4, 5 coming up in your order. So you're looking at J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, your best hitters really this season. And J.D., who finally got out of that funk tonight, had a hit late in the game because he had really struggled mightily on the road trip and looked awful against off-speed pitches. And he turned it around there at the end of the game. But nonetheless, last night, you think about it, J.D. goes down on 3 straight pitches. And then Bogart's endeavors can't come through either. You can't generate a run there. So in that 17th, you thought to yourself, all right, you can't get a run with Benintendi on third. The Twins are going to come back in the bottom half of this inning, and they're going to win in this game. And that's exactly what they did. Kepler got you for the third time on the night. But nonetheless, it was horrible in terms of the situational hitting last night, and you needed it tonight. And all season long, it's been somewhat of an issue for this team. You think about it, last year they were first in all of Major League Baseball in hitting with runners in scoring position. This year they've dropped down to 14th in that category. But this is something that you take from a positive tonight, where the offense was horrible last night, especially in key situations. And tonight, everybody got it going. Everybody really up and down this order got it going. Brock Holt has been tremendous, really, ever since he came back from the disabled list. But one of the things I'd like to look at is Bogarts, because Xander Bogarts has just been remarkable. And another thing that we have to acknowledge is the Twins' bullpen is horrific. 4.56 ERA coming into tonight in terms of their bullpen ERA. That's 18th in baseball, and you expose that, right? Because what you did, first of all, is you got to Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson, somebody that comes into this one with about a 3.70 ERA. But we all know the history of Gibson is not very good. He's not a great pitcher. In terms of his career, he's got about a 4.70 ERA. So you exposed him, and you exposed the real weakness of the Twins, which is the bullpen. And I'm not saying like that's something the Red Sox, I'm not like discrediting them. I'm saying when you have a guy that's in the lower part of a team's rotation, and when you have a bullpen that is vulnerable, especially considering that both teams had to use a ton of arms last night, you need to expose that, and that's exactly what the Red Sox did. That's a credit to them. It's not like the Twins were able to expose a guy that was one of your lower-end rotation guys, right? The fourth guy in your rotation. Now, they got to him early, but they weren't able to completely take advantage of him, and Erod settled down a bit. The Twins were not able to expose Erod, and you were able to expose Kyle Gibson and the bullpen tonight of the Minnesota Twins, and they weren't able to expose either one of those things on the flip side of things. But you look at it, Gibson, a guy not a great pitcher, and you get him for 6 earned in 4 1/3. You're supposed to feast on that guy. You did it. You give the Red Sox credit for that. But I want to get to Bogarts for a second here, because you start to look at some of this stuff. He has been by far the Red Sox best player from start to season to now. You can argue whether or not he is going to be for the remainder of the season, but he has been the Red Sox best player. And you think about all the big hits that Xander Bogarts has come up with this season. You think about the home run in the Rangers game that gives you the lead for good last week. Monday, the RBI double in the ninth inning to add that insurance run when you knew you were going to be in a tight game heading into the ninth inning. Bogarts gives you that little bit of cushion to give Brazier a little bit of a cushion, because remember, that was Brazier's first outing back from his leave. So you give him a little bit of a cushion there. And then tonight, the RBI double in the fifth inning to tie the game up. So in plate appearances deemed late and close, okay, which are in the seventh or later, with the team batting that's tied, ahead by one, or the tying run at least on deck. In those situations, so clutch situations, if you will, he's hitting .372 with a .427 on base percentage. It's unbelievable what Xander Bogarts has been able to do this season. You look at the numbers among shortstops entering today. He's third in average at .300, and that's going up. He's first in on-base percentage at .389, second in OPS at .923, fourth in home runs with 14, second in runs with 56, first in doubles with 23. That's how good Xander Bogarts has been this season. He has been absolutely phenomenal, and I get the all-star voting and whatnot. I do understand why he's upset about that. By the way, the number 617-779-7937 is the number if you want to hop on board. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. But I understand why Bogarts is upset about this, because this is how guys are judged after their careers, right? How many all-star appearances have you made? And Bogarts is looking at it right now. He has an argument that he has had the best season for any shortstop in Major League Baseball. Trevor Story has great offensive numbers. I kind of throw some of that out. Like, I'm not trying to diminish Trevor Story, but he gets to play in Colorado, right? Bogarts' numbers, I mean, he's top five in basically every statistical category. In fact, he's mainly top three in most statistical categories for shortstops. You can make the argument he's been the best shortstop in all of Major League Baseball, and he's going to have to sweat out the voting to see if he gets in the All-Star game. I can understand why a player would be upset about that. And Red Sox fans in general, it's not something that's on the top of their minds. Like, Red Sox fans aren't rushing to vote for All-Stars. What Red Sox fans are concerned about is they're concerned about this team getting back to a World Series and possibly repeating as champs. So I get it from that perspective as well. But I do understand why Bogarts is upset about this. And people are saying, oh, why should he be upset about this? Well, because this is how players are judged. And they want to be judged amongst their peers. And Bogarts wants to spend his couple of days off at the All-Star game. I don't blame him whatsoever for being aggravated about that. But look, we give Dave Dombrowski a lot of crap for some contracts he's gotten wrong over the past couple of years, and I still point to the Nathan Eovaldi thing, $17 million per season. I don't get it. He had one nice postseason run, so I don't understand why you reward him with $17 million per season, especially considering the guy's always injured. Shocker, he's injured again. But you have to give him credit for this Bogarts thing, right? As much as I want to slam the Eovaldi contract, and I've been doing that for months now, I give him a ton of credit for this Bogarts contract, $20 million per season. Think about this compared to Mookie Betts. Remember, Mookie Betts, we're talking about a guy that's going to get $300, $400 million, and Bogarts has been the significantly better player, and they're both 26, and they both have October birthdays. They're right around the same age. Now, I get that Bogarts has more experience time, if you will, but, I mean, Bogarts this year has been the far superior player. Like, this contract for Xander Bogarts, $20 million per season, 6 years, and he signed through his 33-year-old season. This is going to be one of the better contracts in all of Major League Baseball, because right now you can make the argument that he's the best shortstop in the sport, and he's only making $20 million per season. You can say, oh, Brian, $20 million per season, that's a lot of money. Yeah, it is for me and you to look at it, but for a Major League shortstop and a guy that's a star, he's not going to be a Gold Glove caliber shortstop, but he's very good defensively. And offensively, he's been the best player on your team, okay? He's been the best player on the team this season. It's incredible what Bogarts has been able to do. So that's one contract that Dave Dombrowski certainly did get right. I mean, unbelievable job by Dombrowski getting that contract done when he did. Like, oh, now, the rest of the offseason stuff, I mean, we can go back to the bullpen and the Eovaldi contract and all that crap. But this thing, Dave Dombrowski got this one right. Slam dunk. He got this one right for sure. Erod's outing real quickly. So I'll give Erod credit for two things. So first of all, he went 7 innings, which is huge, because you needed a lot of innings after what happened last night, considering the fact that the bullpen was completely spent. In fact, the only guy that wasn't used was who? Marcus Walden, right? So I give Erod a ton of credit for that. I really do. I mean, you have to give him credit for going 7 innings. And he did make an adjustment, which is something we have not seen from Erod throughout this season. It's something that Erod has really struggled with, is making adjustments as the game goes on. And, you know, the numbers would dictate that with Erod. Third time through the lineup throughout the season, he's been really bad. I mean, he's been really bad the third time through the lineup. Guys are hitting .311 with a .358 on base percentage and an OPS over 1,000. So he hasn't made the adjustment. And tonight it seemed like he did. He made an adjustment as the game went on. His final 3 innings doesn't allow a run. Now, still, there's some issues with Erod. The fact that lefties are absolutely crushing the ball off Erod this season, where you look at lefties this season, they're hitting well over .300 against Erod. So that's an issue, and the fact that for some reason they can't figure out the first inning with Erod, right? I don't understand this, okay? So Tampa Bay, 4 straight hits to begin that game. And then the Baltimore game, Trey Mancini gets him in the first inning for a home run. And then tonight, 3 straight hits to begin the game. And really, he gets lucky to get out of that inning, and that's the only damage done, right? Because you think about it, it should have been a lot worse, but Jackie Bradley Jr., unbelievable play, where he guns down C.J. Cron after the missile that Nelson Cruz hit off the wall. So it was an unbelievable play by Jackie Bradley Jr. So whether it's Erod internally, whether it's something that Erod has to do, whether he has to make some sort of adjustment, clearly that has to happen. But maybe it's Alex Cora, maybe it's Dana Lavangie. Somebody has to get with Erod and figure out what's going on with these first innings. Because you take away the first inning tonight, and he really did settle into the start. Now, he had a hiccup along the way, but all in all, this is what you need from Erod. Because now I've come to the realization, and maybe I'm just too late to the party on this, maybe my issue with Erod over the past couple of years is I've been wanting too much from Erod, because what I hear every spring training is about how talented he is, his stuff is the best on the staff. Like, we hear that kind of crap all the time during spring training. But now I've just come to the realization, like, probably everybody was ahead of me on this, and probably everybody just acknowledged it sooner than I did. Maybe I was just too hopeful when it came to Erod. But I remember when he was traded for Andrew Miller, he was the number one prospect in the Orioles organization, right, in terms of the pitchers. So I was thinking that this guy could eventually be a front-end starter, and now I've just come to the realization that Erod is what he is. And if this is your fourth starter in your rotation, and he can go out there, and he can go up against a good team, and he can give you 7 innings and only allow 4 earned runs, I got to be happy with that, right? Because if that's what I'm judging him as the fourth starter in the rotation, I have to be happy with the results that he gave me today. I have to be happy with that. I mean, that's great for a fourth starter. Look at the guy that's in the lower end of the Twins rotation, right? When you think about it from Kyle Gibson's perspective, he only gives them 4 1/3, and you get him for 6 earned runs. And this is the best offense in baseball statistically this season. Now, do I think those numbers will hold up? Probably not. But nonetheless, Right now, they're the best offense in Major League Baseball. And Erod went in there, and yeah, he had his struggles, but he only gave up 4 earned runs. And the best sign of all is that he settled down as the game went on, and he gave you, what, 111 pitches. So this is a great start for a guy that's the 4th arm in your rotation, if you will. And maybe he turns into the 5th arm, depending on what Eovaldi does when he comes back. But quite frankly, I'm not depending on Nathan Eovaldi, and I don't think, quite frankly, anybody out there is depending on Nathan Eovaldi outside of the Red Sox organizationally. I don't think any fan right now has the faith that Eovaldi is going to come back and be like a key contributor. I'm sorry. The guy throughout his career has a 4.21 ERA. He had a couple of nice months in the a nice month in the postseason with that 1.61 ERA, but I don't expect Eovaldi to come back and like lift and elevate this pitching staff. I'd just like to see him come back because they have not figured out this 5th starter thing. And we saw last week, Brian Johnson, he came back, tried to fulfill that role, and he wasn't capable of doing it. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. Let's get to David. He's in Florida tonight. What's going on, David?
Hey. Oh, let me get you off speaker. Oh, I'm coming.
All right, David.
What's on my phone?
What?
Trying to fix my phone.
Hey, come on. You got anything? What's going on here, man? Like the phone?
There we go.
All right, cool. What do you got?
There we go. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to Mr. Castiglione. Harvardian? I mean, Harvardian Joe Castiglione? I mean, he was talking about some guy in the Twins team who graduated from Harvard, and he called him a Harvardian. I've never heard of a Harvardian before. And thank you, Mario, for referencing that. God, that made me cringe, Joe. Harvardian. What would someone from Yale or Cornell be called? A Cornellian?
I guess a Yalian.
What's your Sox point, Dave? Well, I mean, I have to admit, full disclosure, when they were up 3-1, and then like in the 4th or 5th inning, midway through the game, when Eduardo had that hiccup, like you said a minute ago, and he blew the lead, I was getting ready to lambaste him, and I was gonna call in and say, you know, they're done, they're cooked, they're pathetically mediocre. We'll see. This could mean if they do turn it around, this is definitely a turning point. Like you said, they finally beat. They took a series from a very good team, and I mean, in the past they were just beating up on the little kids. Now they played well. I mean, they came back after they surrendered the lead. They came back, and I mean, I'd still like to see a little more of the fundamentals involved. But Eduardo hung in there. How many innings did Eduardo go?
He ended up going 7, David, and I agree with you. I give him a lot of credit because that 4th inning, he gives up the 2 home runs. Kepler, which, by the way, I'd be fine never seeing Max Kepler again. This guy is killing the Red Sox, or he did kill the Red Sox in the series last night. Big hit in the 8th inning. Home run in the 13th inning. The walk-off hit as well.
I got one more thing, too.
I'm done seeing Kepler, but nonetheless, I agree with you. I was shocked that he was able to figure things out after that 4th inning. But what was your other point?
One thing I'd like to see them do, and I mean, is make a trade, and I'd love to see them pursue Bumgarner. I know we're taking off a lot to get him.
You think that's what they need, another starting pitcher? Like, David, what about the bullpen?
You can never, you know, if you have good starting pitching, then that's going to make the bullpen's life much easier.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into all these trade speculations, but I would, within reason, I would give up a lot to get Bumgarner, and I think that could be a big sum.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. I just don't see that happening for a number of reasons. The first one being, you just spent $145 million on Chris Sale, and you just spent $68 million on Nathan Eovaldi in terms of your starting pitchers. I don't see Dave Dombrowski going out and giving up like a high-level prospect for the services of Madison Bumgarner. And I get Bumgarner's contract is pretty manageable, but I also think that the Yankees are going to get him. Unfortunately, I think that's what's going to happen. We see the Yankees, they're stockpiling on things, right? They already have like a million power hitters, and they go out and get Edwin Encarnacion. You also look at the fact that this Yankees team, the rotation now, Paxton has not been the pitcher they thought he was going to be. He's been dealing with injuries. Now, maybe he gets it together. They're going to get Severino back. What the Yankees are really missing is, we know it's lights out after the 6th inning with those guys, right? The Canelys, the Chapmans of the world, the Brittons of the world, the Ottavinos of the world. So their bullpen is great. The one thing they're missing is a starting pitcher. And that guy on the market is Madison Bumgarner. So I think the Yankees are going to end up getting Bumgarner, unfortunately, for Red Sox fans. I also don't think it's a wise move for the Red Sox to go after Bumgarner, because what they need right now is bullpen help. And I cannot see Dave Dombrowski spending all that money on, or all those assets, if you will. I'm talking about basketball terminology now, but giving up farm guys to go after Madison Bumgarner when you just gave $145 million to Sale and you just gave $68 million to Eovaldi. I just don't see him operating that way. 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and a half or so here on WEI. Let's get to Brian. He's in Springfield tonight. What's going on, Brian?
Yeah, that's interesting thing about Devers. I hope he doesn't get too upset if he doesn't make the All-Star team, because don't you think he'll be picked as a sub by one of the managers or coaches?
You mean Bogarts?
Yeah, Bogart.
Well, I think they'll both end up making it. I just think, you know, he's a little upset that the, in terms of the voting, he's not getting the recognition. And look, rightfully so. I get why he's upset. Like, I don't think this is a big deal. I'm just saying, I get why he's upset. I mean, he's having the best year of maybe any shortstop in Major League Baseball, definitely in the American League, and he's like fourth in the voting. So I get why he's aggravated. And to your Devers point.
Deja vu, oil can Boyd. He had two great years, 83, 84, 85. Didn't make, you were probably a kid then, and but boy, he blew. He flipped out when he didn't make the All-Star team a couple times.
Yeah, and look, I understand it. These guys, look, it's a fun weekend for these guys. Remember how much fun David Ortiz used to have at the All-Star game? So he wants to be there. I understand why he's upset. I'm not going to overreact to it and do a segment on how Red Sox fans need to vote for him, because quite frankly, I'm not voting for the All-Star game, so I shouldn't tell the fans to do it. But I do understand where Bogarts is coming from. Did you have another point, Brian, you wanted to get to?
Yeah. I just saw Yastrzemski banged another home run for the Giants, so... Yeah, Mike Yastrzemski, I know it's too late, but that would have been a good pick for the Red Sox. The Orioles were shopping him around in spring training.
Yeah, I appreciate the call.
Mike, I mean, come on, he's a great ball. He's better than Benintendi and Bradley in the outfield, by no means.
Whoa.
The only reason why
Yastrzemski
didn't come
defensively?
Up 2 or 3 years ago, he had a really bad hip injury, and he had a couple serious operations, but it seems like he recovered.
I understand. Yeah, he had some issues with his hip and whatnot. He had some injury issues, but you can't
say he's a ball player. Come on.
He's
a ball player. I've been watching games for 55 years, and I'll tell you, he's a ball player.
He's 28, and he didn't start the season on the
Yeah, you know what?
His name
could be Mike Smith, too. He's a ball player. It doesn't matter if he's Yastrzemski.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dombrowski.
Well, I mean,
really,
look, but Brian, you can't say he's a better outfielder than Jackie Bradley Jr. The guy won a Gold Glove last year. You see the catch he made last night?
You see the catch Yastrzemski made the other day for
Times have we seen Jackie Bradley Jr. make catches like that? I just don't think you can compare Mike Yastrzemski's Yastrzemski.
Don't think Mike Yastrzemski could blow him away, beat him on the 40-yard dash, or what?
No,
he's a good ball player.
I'm not saying he's not a good ball player, Brian. I'm just saying, like, this is his first year up. Really, his first extended time in Major League Baseball, right? I mean, he's been like a minor leaguer for the majority of his career. Bradley Jr.
Right. Well, but dealing with the Orioles, I mean, they couldn't do anything right. You know,
the Orioles screwed up so many things. No, that's fair.
They signed Chris Davis, and they've signed some other players. Yeah, I think if you played for the Orioles, you should get a mulligan.
Yeah, fair enough. I appreciate the call, Brian. But, I mean, Manny Machado didn't need one. He's one of the better players, or was one of the better players in Major League Baseball over the past 5 to 6 years. I don't think you can compare Mike Yastrzemski defensively making one nice catch for the Giants. And, like, he didn't even start with the big league team this year, okay? And he's 28 years old. I don't think you can compare him defensively to what Jackie Bradley Jr. is able to do in terms of winning a Gold Glove. Jackie Bradley Jr. is one of, if not the best, defensive center fielders in the entire sport. I don't think you could say that he's a better defensive outfielder than Jackie Bradley Jr. I think we're getting a little too sentimental, if you will, to the name. I don't think you can compare the two players right now. All right, a lot more to get into. I want to get into some Celtics stuff as well. The latest with Kyrie Irving, which is not good for one Kyrie Irving, which I'm sure will make Celtics fans very happy. This David Ortiz situation is just bizarre, but I want to continue to chat about the Red Sox, because I have one fear about them winning this series, and I have one fear about them heading into the All-Star break coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'll get to that in just a little bit. Before we do any of that, though, I'll get you trending right here on WEI.
How's Devers?
He's okay, day to day. Most likely we'll stay away from him on Friday. He'll get treatment tomorrow. And, I think he said he was okay at first, and then when he got to third, I'm like, nah, let's not take a chance here. So he came out of the game just in time.
All right, that's the manager Alex Cora after the game tonight on Rafael Devers. If you were watching, you saw Devers beat out an infield single, and he kind of came up weird and held his hamstring a little bit. They did let him get over to third base, then they took him out of the game, and they put Nunez in. Nunez actually had a pair of hits after that, but Devers taken out. You heard what Cora is saying. Friday, we'll probably take it easy. He won't play, and we'll evaluate. We'll go from there. Hopefully, this is just something that is not serious going forward. And you said he's day-to-day. That's what Alex Cora said. But hamstrings are weird. Hamstrings are one of these things that if you don't let them settle properly, they tend to keep coming back. Those injuries continue to come back, and it's a nagging type thing. So I just hope that they make sure that this Devers thing is, let's hold him out until he's definitely ready to go. Let's not re-aggravate this thing. Let's not have this hamstring issue be something that continually comes back for Devers throughout the season. You don't want to see that, okay? So let's just make sure that you take care of Devers in that capacity. By the way, if you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. Okay, a lot on the table. If you want to weigh in anything Celtics-related, certainly welcome to do that because Al Horford now no longer going to be a Boston Celtic. He's looking elsewhere. All this drama with Kyrie Irving, the David Ortiz situation, any of that on the table. But I want to get to something that does concern me a little bit about this Red Sox team right now and something that going forward they have to still acknowledge. So I don't want them to get blinded by this stretch, the Red Sox organization, because you look at it right now and they've won, what, now 7 of 8. So you're feeling good. And you're on the Rays' heels now. If you look at it, you're only 3 games back of the Rays. You're 6.5 games back of the Yankees, but only 3.5 games back, or rather 3 games back right now of the Rays. And you look at the schedule that the Red Sox have before the All-Star break, it is very, very favorable. So you're going to have a 3-game set coming up that starts on Friday with the horrible Blue Jays, who are 26-47 on the season. Then you have the White Sox, who absolutely suck. They're 34-36. You have 2 with the Yankees in London. So obviously the Yankees are really good, but then 3 more with the crap Blue Jays, and then 3 with the god-awful Tigers, okay, who are 25-43. So you look at that compared to the Yankees. They have 4 with the Astros, they get 3 with the Blue Jays, but then they have 2 with you, and then they have another 4 with the Rays. So 4 with the Rays, 4 with the Astros before the break, okay? You only have 2 with the Yankees in terms of good competition. You look at the Rays before the break, they have 4 with the A's, they have 3 with the Twins, who we all know are a good team, they have 3 with the Rangers, who we know are a pretty good team, and they have 4 with the Yankees. So if you look at it, the Red Sox just have 2 games before the break with teams over .500, and that being the 2 games in London with the Yankees. That's it. The rest of it, you're playing the Blue Jays, you're playing the Tigers, you're playing bad baseball teams. You're playing the White Sox. The Yankees are playing the Rays. They're playing the Astros. The Rays are playing the Yankees, and they're playing the Rangers, the Twins. So both those schedules are brutal. So here is my fear. You look at the Red Sox right now, we know they have issues in terms of 14 blown saves on the season, okay? I don't trust a lot of guys out there. Even if you look at Workman last night, a guy that has, I get it, a great opponent's batting average against, if you will, right? He's been great this season in terms of that, but he walks too many damn guys. 24 walks and 34 2/3, okay? To put that into perspective, David Price has walked 15 guys and 66 1/3, okay? So Workman has 9 more walks than Price has. Also, if you look at Sale, he's walked just 21 guys in 90 1/3. So you can't rely on Brandon Workman in critical situations in the postseason. And he's right now like your second best reliever, right? So you need to add to your bullpen. And my fear is that you're playing teams like the White Sox and like the Blue Jays. And I understand internally they know they have to add a arm to the Red Sox. They understand that. They know they have to add to this bullpen. And I truly believe that coming into the season, they even knew that they were going to have to do this at the deadline. But my fear is like Brazier is going to go on a nice little run here. And the Colton Brewers of the world, et cetera, are going to go on a nice little run here. Marcus Walden's going to go on a nice little run here because they're playing against crappy competition before the All-Star break. And the Red Sox aren't going to completely cash in on the reliever market, right? They're going to get an arm. They're going to say, hey, the rest of these guys starting to figure it out. Because remember, the trading deadline, it's just July 31st this year. It's different than previous seasons. So they're going to go into this thing and be like, yeah, we're good. We're good, because they're going to get tricked by this run they go on against inferior competition. But what I want this team to do is, because relievers in general are schizophrenic by nature, right? You could be good 1 year and bad the next year. Now, some of them are always great, but some of them we see guys go on like unbelievable runs and then they're not the same pitcher the next year. And we've seen even with this team in general, you've had issues in terms of upgrading at the deadline before, where you went out and you got an Addison Reed and you thought you were going to get an eighth inning guy that was going to be reliable. And it turned out he wasn't the same guy once he came over to Boston. So if it's me, I want to take as many bites at the apple as I can, because this is really your big issue, right? This is your only big issue. The lineup's fine. The lineup is an elite-level lineup. I shouldn't say it's fine. It's better than fine. The issue with runners in scoring position, that's going to turn around, okay? We saw it tonight, okay? So this lineup is great. The pitching staff, you know what you have with Price. You know what you have with Sale. And Rick Porcello's that third guy right now, unless somehow Evaldi bumps him off that mountain, if you will. But I don't see that happening based on the health, everything going on with Evaldi. He was close to coming back, then biceps tendonitis. I don't trust that. So you're fine with the rotation, okay? And Erod being the fourth guy, good enough, okay? Or the fifth guy, whatever it turns out to be. But what you need is the bullpen, and you need to take multiple shots at this thing. You think about Sean Doolittle's out there, Felipe Vasquez, a guy from the Pirates who's been great this season, Ken Giles. I get he's on the IL right now, but that's another name you're going to hear. Shane Green's a name you're going to hear. I want the Red Sox to go all in, get a couple of these guys, get two relievers, okay, to give yourself multiple shots at making sure you hit on one of these guys. Because if one of them misses, at least you get another guy in there. Because right now, you can't roll in to the postseason with the same type of plan you had last year. It's not going to duplicate itself. It's not going to repeat itself. So right now, what this team has in terms of the bullpen is 14 blown saves. That is tied for the league in the American League. And I get the fact that you have a nice bullpen ERA. But I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the fact that you've blown 14 saves. And this team, basically, this is a bullet wound, and you can't put a Band-Aid on this, right? You can't go out there and just get one reliever. They got to get multiple relievers, and try to make sure that part of your team is secure heading into the postseason, because that's the only thing that's separating you from being an elite-level baseball team. That's the one issue you have. Your lineup's fine. I trust the guys at the top end of that rotation, although let's hope that Sale makes it to September and is the Sale we're seeing right now, not the Sale we saw last September and the September before that, and even going back to his final year as a member of the White Sox, his ERA was closer to 4 in September than it was 3. So let's hope we get the Sale we're seeing right now. But the one issue is the bullpen, and that's what Dave Dombrowski should be looking for right now, is how can I upgrade my bullpen? Not one arm, but two arms, heck, three arms if you can. Just make sure that you double down, triple down on this thing, because you can't go into October with the guys you have right now. Now, I am positive they'll get at least one arm, but I just hope they don't get distracted by the fact that they're about to beat up on bad competition and not get multiple bites at the apple, if you will. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 90 minutes or so here on WEI. Let's get to Mike in North Providence. He wants to talk some C's. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Brian. Yeah, with regards to the Celtics, I'm. You know what? I didn't think that Al was going to be pretty much here when they were ready for the winning a title, unless he had already kind of like, you know, moved on to being more of a role player at that point.
Yeah, you're saying so maybe after the, you're saying Mike, after everything transpired, Kyrie left. Yeah. There was not going to be Davis. Yeah, he was going to be outside. If they do get back with Tatum and Brown, et cetera, then it was going to be outside the window. I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of these things where maybe it's just in the big scheme that it's best that he leaves right now, because it allows, you know, Danny to just start focusing on building the team for down the road. And in particular, I want him to use these three first rounders. I don't want him to trade any of these guys away, because there's room on the roster to go and add four rookies. And in this particular draft, this is a special circumstances draft. It's outside the top two picks there. It basically turns into wingapalooza. It's all these wings. And we got guys, we have two wings that are as good, if not better, than any of the wings that are available, but other teams want them. I mean, like, I don't know if you heard this, but the Pels evidently are dangling that four pick because Danny wants this Darius Garland for Jalen. Why? Because, well, they would like a wing too, but they'd rather have Jalen Brown, who's better than any of these guys. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, we already have Jalen Brown. We already have Jason Tatum. So all the bigs and the combo guards and people like that that we could actually use going forward are getting pushed down to our range.
And yeah, and Mike, hold on one sec to that point about Jalen. And, you know, I've seen the rumors, too, that they could be interested in trading up to four. I don't have any – and I understand there was a report in the Globe that said that other teams are wondering about Jalen Brown. I don't understand why you would trade him to move up to four. What are you setting the timeline even back even further? Like, that
no,
makes
I'm not saying that Danny wants to trade Jalen. My point is the complete opposite. It's that these other teams want these wings, and this is why this draft is good for us, because we don't need wings. We have Brown and Tatum. We're all set, right? What we need are guards and bigs. And these guards and bigs are getting shoved down into our range of the draft. People like Cabangeli and Goga Batadze and Nick Claxton, all of whom I think are going to have nice careers in the NBA at the very least. And some of them might end up being all-stars. And same thing with the guards. There's a lot of like combo guards like Tyler Herro who are good players. I mean, like Herro could, I think, could be like, you know, J.J. Redick with more point guard skill. You know, like this is the sort of thing where you can't just sniff at that. You have to say, wait a second here. In this particular draft, there's going to be a lot of talent available. And then even a guy like Darius Bazley, who he's a special circumstances guy because he's one of the top college recruits. But then he got talked into the idea of, like, you know, skipping college and doing, you know, like he's going to go to the G League. And it all blew up in his face.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he's not really, really good. And now because there's question marks on him, he'll slide down into your range. Where if he had played at Syracuse this year, he might be going number five in this draft.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So I don't want to trade these picks away for what? For why? Why trade any of those picks away when you have Danny Ainge? One of the best things that Danny's ever been good at is selecting talent. Let him take the swings at the picks, and let's see what we have during the season. They just go out there. Who cares if they win? What's the worst thing that can happen? They have a better draft pick? I mean, really? I mean, I'm not worried about this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd rather have the talent and see if Danny can find somebody.
Yeah,
because the next Kawhi or next Giannis might be sitting there for him to take, and everybody's snoozing right now, and he's got three swings at it.
No, that's a fair point, Mike. I appreciate the call. I mean, finding the next Kawhi or Giannis, that's tough to do. But, I mean, look, Kawhi and Giannis did go outside of the lottery. So, hey, maybe Danny Ainge could find that guy. I think that's wishful thinking. But I do understand the thought from Mike, and I tend to agree with him. Like, one of the things that Danny Ainge has done really, really well is he's been able to draft guys. Think about Tatum, and he was able to trick the 76ers to move down to three and pick up an additional draft pick for that. Jaylen Brown with the third overall pick. Everybody was scratching their head when Danny Ainge drafted Jaylen Brown, and Jaylen Brown's turned out to be a really good player. So Danny Ainge has been successful in terms of some of the draft picks he's made over the past couple of years. So I understand where Mike's coming from to say, let him make the picks. Now, I did see that report about Jaylen Brown. The teams are interested in Jaylen Brown's availability. I don't know why Danny Ainge would do that now. Like, if you're going to trade Jaylen Brown, you're not trading Jaylen Brown. I'm not saying Danny Ainge is doing this. I'm just saying there was a report in the Globe where teams were calling or teams were interested in the Celtics' possibility of moving Jaylen Brown, right? But if I was going to ever trade Jaylen Brown, it would have been for one of those deals like the past couple of years, like for a Kawhi Leonard, like for an Anthony Davis. I'm not trading Jaylen Brown to take the fourth overall pick in this year's draft. I already know Jaylen Brown's a pretty established player. I'm not taking a chance on a Darius Garland and getting rid of Jaylen Brown. That would make no sense to me whatsoever. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to hop on board, weigh in on the Celtics, you can certainly do that. Some news that is going to make Celtics fans happy about Kyrie. I'll get to that. Plus, this David Ortiz story just gets more bizarre by the day. Number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you right here on WEEI Late Night.
Authorities say David Ortiz was not the target. Instead, it was another man at the bar wearing a similar outfit. In a bizarre scene, Cruz told reporters from his jail cell window last week that he was confused and was only told what color of clothing to look for. Dominican police are still looking for several others, including the mastermind of the plot, the man who provided the money.
Investigators here at the Attorney General's office in Santo Domingo say Victor Hugo Gomez was the alleged mastermind. He remains a fugitive on the run, and they tell us that he is also wanted in North America on drug-related charges.
All right, so this David Ortiz story continues to get more bizarre by the day. By the way, Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so here, WEI Late Night, number 617-779-7937. All right, so here's the latest as we know it. So that today was a press conference in the Dominican Republic. That was a news report, but there was a press conference today. The Attorney General, John Rodriguez, said the attack was supposed to be against Sixto David Fernandez, I believe I'm saying his name right, a friend of Ortiz, who you heard in the news report, regularly attends the bar that Ortiz was at. Now, the alleged gunman, Rolfi Cruz, did tell a reporter last week he was aiming for somebody besides Ortiz, so I guess that's kind of what they're going with here in terms of what he's referencing. But there is surveillance video that shows Cruz running behind Ortiz and shooting him in the back, remember? And this wasn't like he was far away. He went up to him and shot him right in the back. And the DA, or Excuse me, yeah, the Attorney General, rather, not the DA. The Attorney General, Rodriguez, also announced that a drug cartel member, Victor Gomez, is the mastermind behind the shooting, as you heard in the news report. Now, the gunmen were apparently each paid $7,800 to carry out the attack. We heard about that. Now, Rodriguez added that a fugitive named Victor Hugo Gomez, whom he said is wanted by U.S. law enforcement, ordered the killing of Fernandez because of a longtime beef over supposedly providing information to police about him. Okay, so that's what the Attorney General in the Dominican Republic is saying. Now, Rodriguez said the gunman, Rolfi Cruz, was handed a photo of the intended victim, but the lighting made it look like Fernandez was wearing white pants as Ortiz was that night, and he confused the two, okay? I don't know if I buy that. Let me go on. Rodriguez also said that Dominican authorities identified the fugitive, and he believes that they also identified the man they believe paid the hitman to attack Ortiz. So they know who was behind it, but they don't have him. But they also identified the fugitive, Alberto Mata, who's the man who apparently paid the hitman. So you have the Attorney General saying the attack wasn't meant for Ortiz, basically, and the rationale is there was this other guy that's a buddy of Ortiz that apparently that guy was ratting to police about something, okay? But remember, just last week we had the Daily Mail, amongst other national publications and international publications, I should say, reporting that a drug kingpin had ordered a hit on Ortiz because he was engaged in a romantic relationship with one of the kingpin's partners. Receipts also showed Ortiz purchased an $85,000 Lexus for a woman that happened one day before the shooting. He bought her a Lexus. Remember, the woman that he allegedly was having an affair with that was also in relations with a drug kingpin. All right, so earlier this week, you had Eddie Dominguez, who was on with Mutton Callahan. He was a former Red Sox security official who traveled with the team, and he has connections in the Dominican Republic. So this is what he had to say in regards to the Dominican law enforcement officials. This is on Mutton Callahan earlier this week. Quote, David is very popular in the DR. He's loved there. No question about that. I'm sure they're going to try to put the best spin possible on it. But I'm going to tell you that you need to question something with the whole story there. I think the only way you'll get to the bottom of this is if the United States law enforcement officials get involved. Okay, so that's a guy that used to work for the Red Sox in terms of security, Eddie Dominguez, and he's somebody that is saying, listen, you can't believe everything that the Dominican authorities are going to come out and say. The only way we're going to get the truth in terms of what really happened is if you have American law enforcement officials there. So this is kind of a spin situation, if you will, right? Or at least he's saying there could be a spin zone going on here. So listen, I can't really buy this story. I can't really buy what we heard today from the Attorney General there in the Dominican Republic, because it just doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense. It doesn't pass the smell test, if you will, that David Ortiz, who is, as we've heard over the past couple of weeks, from all the stories that have come out, he is like the most popular person in the Dominican Republic. So this guy that was hired to shoot Ortiz got a picture of Ortiz, right, from the guy that was paying the hitman. So on that picture, he sees Ortiz, and or actually he sees the other guy, and he just mistakes David Ortiz the night because they both had white pants on. Like, come on, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. David Ortiz is what, 230 pounds? Like, he's a massive man. He's the most popular person in the Dominican Republic. So I'm just supposed to believe what the Attorney General is saying today, that it just so happened that this was a botched hit attempt. They were really looking for the other guy. It seems like they went way out of their way to make up this other storyline, did the authorities in the Dominican Republic, for us to basically believe that storyline rather than believe everything that's going on in terms of the tabloids and whatnot, and all these entities that are putting out the story there that David Ortiz could have possibly been in a relationship with a drug kingpin's mistress or girlfriend, whatever it may be. Like, it just seems like what the Dominican officials were doing today was protecting David Ortiz's image, right? That's what it smells like to me. That's what it smells like to me, because I don't buy this, okay? They put together this attack on just a guy that David Ortiz happened to be with, and the most popular guy in the Dominican Republic just so happened to get shot. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't pass the smell test. Clearly, David Ortiz was the target. So what we got today was just some sort of prerogative by the Dominican officials, right? Their idea was to spin this to make it look like it was a botched attempt and David Ortiz wasn't the target, to protect David Ortiz, right? Because David Ortiz, we know, is loved in the Dominican Republic. And now we see that all these stories have come out that are painting David Ortiz in a bad light, right? They're making it look like he's having an affair with a drug kingpin's mistress, girlfriend, whatever it may be, right? And that doesn't look good for Ortiz, right? There's been, since he ended up getting shot, there's been a lot of bad publicity there. So it doesn't pass the smell test to me whatsoever. This does not seem like it was a botched attempt. Now, the botched attempt was the fact that David Ortiz survived, but I don't think that what happened is what they're telling us, okay? So he just so happened to mistake David Ortiz for the guy he was supposed to shoot because they were both wearing white pants. Like, come on. This is David Ortiz, the most popular guy in the Dominican Republic. You're telling me they just so happen to screw this thing up? Makes no sense to me whatsoever. Quite frankly, I don't believe what the attorney general in the Dominican Republic was saying today when he was giving that press conference. I don't buy any of it whatsoever. I believe what it is. It's a cover-up attempt to protect David Ortiz's image. That's what I believe, okay? Call me crazy, but that's what I believe. Your number is 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in on that, certainly welcome to do so. Want to get into some Celtics stuff in just a little bit here, because there is one story out there that Celtics fans are going to like as it pertains to Kyrie Irving. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. You're listening to Brian Barrett on WEEI Late Night.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.